Welcome to the 9th episode of Easter Mall 2024 Recaps from Reality TV Warriors. My name is Michael Harmstone, and joining me as always are the Canadian who I think it's fair to say has revealed enough secret things for one season, Logan Saunders.
Good afternoon.
And the guy who is permanently tense about everything he's seen in this season, David Bindley.
Good morning.
Good morning. What a finale. This is a finale for the ages.
Oh, yep.
Yeah.
It was a real home run. Not for Rocky's charity, but...
This was indeed a finale.
So, are we really counting this as a final three, or are we counting this as a final four?
It's a final three.
But they all took the final quiz, and there was no challenge afterwards. It was just, oh, we're just going to announce who got the bottom score, like we're Ryan Seacrest right now. They're not doing anything additional.
And the winner will be revealed after a week-long break.
Yeah, he's Rick just Seacrested us.
I must admit, as down as I am on the mid bit of this season, where we had basically 2 weeks when nobody went home, I don't hate it as much with them still doing a final three in the end. I hate final fours anyway. I think it's pointless because the ending of the mold is always winner, loser, mole. You can't have winner, losers, and mole because that just doesn't work as well. But I don't hate it as much now we actually have a final three.
But it's like a final four, though, because all they're doing is just saying, oh, this person did not win, or this person got the lowest score out of the three non-moles. Now we're going into the final reveal next week. There isn't another challenge or an additional 5 questions for them to do with just the final three. There's no differentiation between the experience of Case going home and the other three, other than he doesn't have to shiver outside in Vondel Park for an hour. That's the only difference.
Probably a good thing at his age.
You really think in this densely packed finale we could have fit one more challenge in? I mean, come on. There was no room for anything in this finale. It was just jam-packed, all killer, no filler.
Yeah, but we don't consider El Salvador and Nicaragua a final two because they announced Sandoz as the loser.
No, but they also didn't do the live finale with that.
Hmm.
They still leave it ambiguous as to who the mole is at the end of this episode, kind of. Anyway, let's not talk about what we're actually here to talk about. Let's talk about the preamble stuff, because there's loads of stuff to talk about this week.
Oh, thank God. I might have more notes about the preamble than I do about the actual episode.
Beginning with something Vidim-themed, I do feel a little bit bad that we took the piss out of Rihanna so much when it turns out she'd had a parasite for 3 weeks.
What?
Did you not hear about this?
No, I did not.
She did an interview after her execution last week where she's like, yeah, on day 2 I got a really bad parasite.
And his name was Fonz.
I got a parasite, but in human form.
So it turns out that maybe Rihanna wasn't just old and slow. She was old, slow, and had a parasite.
And parasitic.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'll do it. That sucks. Sucks for her. Wonder if they modified the challenges after that and said, oh, by the way, we have a contestant with a parasite?
Yeah.
Or did they not diagnose her until after she was executed?
You'd hope it was afterwards, because if they made her take part in the mole for 2 weeks with a parasite without giving her antibiotics or anything, that's pretty shitty on production's part.
Yeah.
Bingo card as well. For the second time this season, Fuzzy has got 2 weeks back-to-back. I suspect she's not going to get 3, because we're going to make it as difficult as possible, because this is a late recording! Woohoo! Fuzzy ain't getting a bingo this week.
Nope.
She's not going to get the turkey?
Nope. We're not giving her the turkey.
In before somebody says a horse comment.
Oh, there's a horse comment coming. Don't worry about that.
Oh, fantastic.
We also, as predicted, got some Belkia news in that we got March 24th as the premiere date, aka the best day of the year. It's a little bit fun for us because we're probably going to be recording the reunion episode of this season on Bindle's birthday next week. And then the premiere of Belkia is on my birthday, the 24th of March.
And I've already had correspondence with Papa Bear Jill DaCosta, and I will be in Belgium for this year's finale. My flights are booked.
As will I. I've tried to book it off with work today, the Monday at least, so just waiting for them to get back to me, and then I will book my flights and accommodation as well.
I will not be in Belgium this year. Maybe next
year.
They are teasing that someone has a new role in the game other than the mole. Do you have any thoughts on what it's going to be before I give my theory?
America's player? And it lasts for 1 week, like, what's her name, Monet?
No, it was like Annie.
12?
It was Annie.
Annie, was her name.
Monet was in that season as well. But
it Annie was Monet.
Annie was the America's player. No, I mean, I've heard rumors that it's going to be Jill being one of the contestants as well as host. Genuinely, non-zero amount of people believe that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's good to get all the bad ideas out there first.
Yeah.
Can you imagine him as contestant? I got to pick them all, and now I'm going to sit down to the quiz. Ooh, 20 out of 20, 20 out of 20. I can never be executed. I'm going to win. And the winner at the end of the season, me!
And just like Akbar and Holtz on the Tournament of Champions on Jeopardy, all the money I earn will go to me and not charity.
Oh, he's like the anti-Rocky.
Yeah. My theory on this is, thinking back to what we know about the season already, it's filmed in Sicily, obviously. They have already teased that there is going to be some sort of mafia theming to the season, which will be glorious, obviously. I wonder if they're going to adapt something from the social deduction game Mafia.
Oh, you think they would?
Go literally Mafia, because they're teasing new roles, which is obviously something that Mafia or Werewolf or whatever you want to call it is famous for.
Oh, so maybe somebody gets to play the role of Angel and save and pick one person to save from execution, or one person gets to be detective and just ask if one of the other players is the mole and they get confirmation, yes or no.
Exactly what I think. I think it's going to be Angel or Doctor or whatever you want to call it that is the role that is introduced, because the clue that we've been given basically is that the role is not going to be something that the mole likes. And something that the mole doesn't like would be someone being able to say each episode, you can't go for yourself to save, but you can try and guess who gets the red screen. They have that as a non-elimination. They never do more than one non-elimination in a season, so you can just say, right, your role's over as soon as you hit correctly. But that person being saved obviously gets loads more information out of who isn't.
I think they would do that more likely than a detective, because the detective would confirm who is the mole, just like you would in Mafia. But with the doctor, you can confirm who isn't the mole if they get saved by elimination.
I don't think it's overpowered and would ruin the game.
Yeah, if they did that. We've already seen what happens when somebody knows who the mole is from episode one.
They get executed twice.
You have to replace them all halfway through the season.
Yeah, but knowing what we know about Belkia, they love an on-the-nose reference. And I think that they included the Mafia reference, not only because it's Sicily, but because they're going to introduce a role from Mafia. And it was a sort of trying to subvert everyone's thinking. As soon as we saw a Mafia trailer, we go, oh my god. They're going to put them in fedoras. They're going to give them pinstripe suits. It's going to be amazing for the promo images. No, they're just going to steal something from Mafia.
Yeah. Either that or the two stuff is a Godfather Part 2 reference.
Yeah. Which, you know, I would love it if they just do Mafia films as the inspiration this season, because I think it would be hilarious to see them do some sort of paintball Gatling gun, especially.
Run through a field with orange slices in your mouth.
Yeah, someone wakes up with a horse's head in the bed, for example.
And then he comes and does a podcast with the two of us.
There we go, Bindles. You're welcome. but yeah, I think that is the most likely actual Mafia reference that we're going to get in Belkia at the moment. And if I'm right, then I'll be really gloaty. So there we have it. Also on a Belkia note, in trying to find information earlier in the week to see if they put trailers up or whatever, I stumbled upon a sponsor that they're going to have for this season. And it is the most Italian sponsor you can possibly think of.
Fiat.
Even better.
Ducati.
They are being sponsored by a tomato company. They are literally going to be sponsored by pasta sauce.
Pasta Berda Costa.
Elvia Tomatoes is the name of the company. They have already posted, they reposted the trailer of Jill and world-famous actor Matteo Simoni, saying that they're sponsoring the season. So yes, it's incredibly likely that when we go to the finale, we will either get a free tin of tomatoes, or it will be some sort of tomato-based dish in the press room sodas.
Papa Bear Gilda Pasta?
Pasta Bear, obviously.
Yeah, I was about to... I didn't know which one was better. Pasta Bear Gilda Costa or Papa Bear Gilda Pasta?
Pasta Bear's better.
I think Pasta Bear was my nickname in uni.
Oh, you're accruing so many nicknames. Also on a podcast note, we did find out that Hunted is finally going to be back after 2 years since they filmed this series. And Series 7 starts the week before Belkia on the 17th of March. We did think when the March 24th premiere was announced that we were going to get a week off the podcast. You guys do. I do not.
Uh-huh.
The current plan from my conversations with Ant and Michelle earlier is that no matter what they do with the actual scheduling of this series, we are going to do 6 separate episodes on 6 separate weeks, probably beginning on Tuesday the 19th, I think. But that is a heavy pencil at the moment. It will be definitely separate episodes this year, though, because I was really, really pissed off a couple of years ago when they did 2 episodes a week and we had to do essentially 3 episode series. And at the risk of sounding like Tom Gleason, this week I've been really getting into stand-up specials because Lesser Tom and Guy Montgomery have both uploaded their recent stand-up specials to YouTube. So I watched both of them over the weekend.
Are you good?
Oh yeah, Lesser Tom's was amazing. Like, it was far better than I was expecting it to be. And Guy Montgomery's had, appropriately for us, a great joke about him trying ketamine and the natural end of a horse's life cycle being meat or glue. But yes, I would highly recommend that you watch both of them. Lesser Tom's especially was utterly hilarious on Friday night when I was watching that.
Excellent.
And the final thing that I think may appeal to Saunders especially is, did you see what happened on the Amazing Race subreddit last week?
Somebody like hacked into the polling or something like that and rigged which winners were eliminated early in the countdown?
Yep. It was indeed that, as with a lot of these subreddits when there's no material whatsoever, someone decided to do an Amazing Race worst winners poll, and somehow it got through the moderation, which is incredibly lax on that subreddit. And I think they got about 5 or 6 rounds in before they gave up because someone kept hacking the polls every day.
Was it you?
It was not me. I wasn't aware of this until he'd cancelled it, but it really, really tickled me. Because actually most of the decisions that they'd made at that point were pretty good ones. They got Freddie and Kendra out early. The no-name winners from Amazing Race 30 were out about 4th, I think it was.
Oh, they did go out, eh?
Yeah. And none of our friends went out either. Brooke and Scott were still very much in, and Flo and Zach were very much still in. So I was well happy with that.
Oh, good.
And yeah, it was all kicking off a little bit last week because, for some reason, someone had a vested interest in hacking these polls.
So, that came to an end, right? They said they weren't going to do it for now?
They're going to wait a few months until the winners of Amazing Race 36, which have been known for 2 years at this point, can be included in the poll as well. The ending of Amazing Race 36 has been heavily spoilt, despite what Peach thinks.
Luckily, I have not been spoiled on that. I'm sure somebody's going to message me and be a jackass about it.
Yeah, probably me, let's be honest.
It's always you.
I must say, Saunders, your internet's very good for being in Big Brother Canada Sequester as well.
I'm one of the mystery podcast all-stars for this season.
Don't big yourself up too much. You're the Kristen McInnes of our podcast.
Yeah, I hear that now that I'm a mysterious podcasting all-star that Australian Samoan contestant on Australian Survivor is now going to make memes about me, ridiculing me.
Are you looking forward to Big Brother Canada tonight, Saunders?
Yeah, they've already, as per tradition, they announced somebody in the cast and they did promos with all 12 contestants during the Survivor 46 premiere, and one of the people promoted has already been taken out of the cast for undisclosed reasons and replaced with somebody else. They took out somebody who was from Vancouver and replaced it with the 1 millionth contestant from Ontario.
I don't understand why they still announce the cast beforehand when it doesn't require them to be voted on in a twist. I can get it when it's the pre-season twist that they like to do, but there's literally nothing to vote on. You don't need to tell people who the cast are, and you could have got away with it again if you hadn't.
Yeah. But yet they had Ibrahim in the promos during the Survivor 46 premiere saying, "I am going to win this season." And then after the episode aired, they did another promo saying, I am not even going to make it into the house.
My favorite one of those of recent memory is a couple of years ago when US Big Brother did the exact same thing and had to take someone out because he was going on to The Circle and America's Got Talent and then Big Brother Nigeria in the space of about 3 months, I think it was.
Oh, wow.
They cut him because he was on an unaired version of The Circle at that point, and then that aired. And then it turned out that actually they cut him as well because he was auditioning for America's Got Talent and got through to the live shows. And then it turned out that also he got invited to Big Brother Nigeria. And it was like mid-season on that, I think.
How many of the shows did he make it onto those three shows?
It was all three of them. He was on The Circle. He was on America's Got Talent at least three to the live shows, I think. I don't think he did that well in the live shows. And then he lasted till about halfway through on Big Brother Nigeria that same year. Whilst Big Brother US was still airing, I think, at that point. It was quite impressive, actually.
Yeah, to get cast for that many different shows in such a short period of time, that just to have every casting agent saying, we need that guy everywhere.
Because it's a thing in UK casting that the first question they ask you if you've been cast for a show, not that I have for a while, obviously, is, have you got any other in-air shows to air? Because they don't want you to be on Pointless on BBC One and The Chase on ITV at the same time, because that just breaks the illusion or whatever. But I don't know how they didn't ask that question to him, to be honest. Or maybe they did and he lied, which is a natural thing. Of course you're going to lie. You're not going to say, oh no, I'm not going to go on this show because I've already filmed one. You're going to say, oh no, I've got nothing in the pipeline. And then when you get a date, you go, oh yeah, sorry, I do have this one that I've only just filmed. Oops.
Yeah.
I forgot. I completely forgot that I was on back-to-back seasons of Survivor.
So, anything you guys want to say before we rattle through this episode?
Nope.
Yeah, let's do this. Let's talk about math.
So previously, the Final Five built houses of cards to try and fool Rosario. Fonz had to guide the other four to form sentences as no one trusted him before Rianne was the sixth person sent home alongside her new friend, the Parasite.
Yeah, you see the Parasite wearing a backpack too and hopping into the getaway car.
Well, the theory was that Belkia was going to do some sort of duos twist. Maybe this is the original duos twist. It was Tun and Germany Jens, and also Rianne and her Parasite.
Yeah. The Parasite got a red screen and was just completely devastated.
I know we shouldn't laugh about Rianne's Parasite, but it does just make funny. The joke. It makes the jokes funnier. It really does. Because we've spent 9 weeks bullying a 50-odd-year-old woman for being old and slow, and it turns out she just, you know, had a pretty bad Parasite.
Yeah. We could have been bullying Eurowan instead this whole time.
Exactly.
Which Eurowan?
Yes. Oh,
yeah. You got to narrow it down at this point.
The eldest one or the...
The oldest one.
The fun one. I thought there was a different description for him, but I've already forgotten it.
It was the best Eurowan we've seen and the one we don't speak about. So it's day 16 in Bacalar, and they're all still reeling from Rianne going home. No one expected her to go. Case said it's a cliche, but he's had a very fun time, and that's what we call in the business a death knell confessional. Soon as Case opens the episode going, oh, I've had such a fun time, you immediately go, see you later, Case.
Yeah.
GGWP. He says that you're permanently tense from what could be about to happen to you on this show.
He has another confessional at the very start saying, who would have thought this? I'm just sitting there. And then I wrote down, isn't that Rianne's role?
I mean, he was in a lot of the old person positions as well. He didn't do the market like Eurowan and Rianne did with Anna. But, you know, he was still laying by the pool for an afternoon.
And then Fawn says he wants to add some extra fat to the pot, and all four of them talk about how they want to end the season above 9,000 euros. That's all they want. They just want to get over 9,000. You know, 2 months of living expenses in Amsterdam. That's all they want. Or just a sizable donation to Rocky's charity. One or the other.
Honestly, at this point, why not just, you know, play for points and make it a set $10,000, $15,000 prize?
Yeah. we're not going to rehash the numerous rants this season about them being incredibly cheap, but if you're having to wear things in your season where they're all taking the piss out of you being really cheap, maybe learn a lesson from that.
I'm surprised, like, it's always been up to us to point out how ridiculously low the pots have been in recent seasons. This is the third season out of the past four where they finished below 10k, and the second one out of the past three that they finished below 9k. But this is the first time I can recall where we've had several episodes in a row of the contestants saying, look how low the pot is. Production's not giving us an opportunity to earn enough money. I'm surprised that production would go out of their way to just air those confessionals and comments that show just how pissed off the contestants are with the production of the show itself. It leads me to believe that maybe it was a significant part of the conversation contestants had with producers saying, you're not really giving us, or at least we don't think you're giving us a fair chance to earn enough money for the pot.
Yeah. Like, I know because it's celebs, they don't do it for the money and stuff, but you need to actually have some sort of incentive for these people. It's ridiculous the state that it has become, basically. That's the best way I can put it. It's just because nobody really wants to spend 9 weeks watching people earn a massive €8,500 in the end. It's just cheap. So they also, as part of this conversation, seem to reveal that they know someone else is going before the final reveal, and that they're about to have their last chances to add money. So they know that all four of them are going to get the chance to add the money, but they also know that someone else is going before the end of the season.
Maybe somebody let it slip off camera and they couldn't acknowledge that.
Well, they've sort of been talking about it the past couple of weeks, I think. It's sort of been an open secret that there was still going to be a final three at the end. It's very interesting. Also, another thing I wanted to point out before I knew Case was going home here, the main quote-unquote clue for it being Case as the mole seemed to be that he was the first person to put a hand on the shoulder of whoever went home. Like, he seemed to know who it was. But whilst it looked like that last week with Rianne, we actually saw in the previously that Anna was the first to get to Rianne.
Huh.
What is this, Survivor Redemption Island?
Yeah, Anna put a hand on Rianne's shoulder as soon as her screen was about to come up, and then gave her a hug immediately when the red screen came up.
And then she gave the parasite a hug.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, the parasite is basically the Isidore of their season. They've been training it to push a button, and because Rianne wasn't there, they lost out on another 10k in this episode.
Yeah.
It's really sad in the end. Do you think that Rick is going to leave after next week?
I hope so, because it's kind of crazy that if he does next season as well, he's done as many seasons as Art.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's ever really settled into the role properly.
I agree. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the civilian season that's been rumoured with Healer hosting. I'm interested to see whether that's going to be a precursor for Healer actually taking over the show, in which case it's one of the most random choices for alumni possible.
Yeah.
Oh, we've talked about Healer so much on this podcast.
I mean, she did set the world alight in her season, which was Albania, I think.
That was only 2 years ago, and we're struggling to remember which season she was on.
I mean, I am slightly taking the piss there. I know she came from Albania, because she was in my team in that season, I think. But still, she is one of the most random choices possible of an alumna to host this show. So Rick says that these are the last days in Mexico and they only have a few assignments left. They will get help from underwater voices and go head-to-head with the mole one more time before a final discussion with the fortune teller may end their remaining doubts. And I do like to point out things about the family photo, usually who looks to one side or makes gestures or whatever, because that occasionally is a clue. This time, however, I don't think it was a clue because Fonzie's shirt inflates during the family photo. It really tickled me. He's wearing a light shirt because obviously it's really warm in Bacalar. And yeah, it just kind of blows up during the family photo. And the episode title is Decipher, and we do get to see someone paddleboarding in Mexico's backyard canals. And rather subtly, they are at the Cancun Bacalar zipline tour on day 17. And I wonder what they're going to be doing here. There's no intrigue whatsoever.
ziplining.
Even Rick is like, yes, you're doing ziplining. Get on with it.
Yeah, you know what you're doing. You've already got the harnesses on. We're not going to pretend here.
No, he should have been like, psych, you're going to run with the harnesses the whole time. Gotcha.
Psych, instead you're going to do maths.
While watching maths.
I mean, that is a treat for some people. Namely me, because I've just been doing it.
You have to, yeah, if you go down the right path, you can do math equations, earn money for the pod. If you go down the left path, you can binge watch a full season of maths. It's up to you.
If you get the right body part in Yucatan Maya, then you get the money. If you get the wrong one, then someone will either throw glass or red wine in your face. And Rick says it won't be a surprise that they're ziplining alongside a bag containing money for the pot. The tour contains 5 zip lines, and along the way they will see images of the Aleutians, which I believe may just be a collection of people called Alexander from New Zealand. And they are really mythical figures of the Mayans that protect the nature of the jungle. They'll need to memorize the Yucatan Maya for the body parts to unlock the pouches. The more of them that reach the end, the bigger chance they will have of earning money, up to 4,000 euros for the pot. However, along the way one of them will duel with the mole. If the candidate completes a puzzle faster than the mole, the whole group will move on. If they don't, they will stay behind and their money is lost. And they select their pouches, Rosario on purple, Anna on yellow, Kate on pink, and Fons on green.
I was really hoping for it to involve a sword or a gun instead of, you know, pencil numbers and a chalkboard for the duel. Turn around this corner and the mole has a gun. Get down. This is a duel. You wanted a duel with the mole?
I know they had to cater these challenges for potentially loads of old people being left, and also Anna, because she's a mole, obviously. But this is not the first challenge this season where people had to do maths on television.
Yeah.
And they copied another thing from Belgian Mole by saying, oh, the mole did this challenge weeks or months earlier. Now you're going to compete against the time they took to complete the challenge. So how many challenges have been directly lifted from Belgian Mole this year? Like 4?
Yeah. Do you remember what the challenges that the Germany Mole had to do against them was, though?
That was the paddleboarding one, right? With the puzzles in the water?
It was indeed. It was paddleboarding with the jigsaws, but the mini challenges were not fucking mathematics.
No.
What surprised me about this challenge is when they said, oh, once I caught on, the first one was a series of math equations that the mole had done, and it was a race against the mole's clock. I was thinking, oh, that means you're going to do a different mini game at the next 2 or 3 stops, right? And then when they get to that second tower and it's another series of math equations, I was thinking, what? All 3 of them are just going to be math equations? Why couldn't it have been 3 different mini games? That would have been much more exciting to see. Like, yeah. One is math, maybe the second one is, I don't know, some sort of visual brain teaser, and then the third one is a logic puzzle. That would have been really cool to see, but instead it's 3 math equations that we don't even get to see all the numbers, so it was really tough to, especially because we see it, especially the last one that Rosario did, where it was a 19-minute time limit and got condensed down to about a minute on TV. So the audience can't even really play along with that at home, so I thought, yeah, they struck out on what the type of challenge to make the mole do beforehand.
You know what they should have done? When they ran out of time, just sort of cut away and just have Rachel Riley explain how to get the numbers to match up. Because that, like, it was basically the countdown numbers game.
Yeah. Like, at the risk of repeating myself over and over again, and this actually goes back to a Netmole discussion that we have had, it's like they saw the Belkia challenge and thought, how can we make this less interesting? Because the mini challenges off the top of my head during that paddleboard one, yes, they were putting together a jigsaw against the mole. And can I point out, it was filmed a lot more cleverly by Belkia in that we could actually see the mole doing the jigsaw and stuff.
Yeah, it was real-time progress. They compared the clocks to where the mole was at that time and where the contestants were at that exact time, right?
The real-time progress on the maths puzzles was us seeing the 5 wheels until a red filter came on the screen. There was no point to the video. But the actual mini-challenges, off the top of my head, were holding your breath underwater for longer than the mole, using water jets to fire a ball into one of the puzzle maze things, and directly running against the mole to ring the bell on the floating platforms. I think there was one more, but I can't remember what it was off the top of my head. But they were all uniquely interesting challenges. So yes, watching people complete a jigsaw wasn't interesting, but there was so much stuff around it, and obviously they were on the Slay SA and had to paddle on the giant paddleboard. There was so much around it that made it work a lot better than this does.
And here all we get is, you know, 20 minutes of Anna riding a zipline.
And I was just thinking too, like, even they could have messed up one of these things compared to the Belgian version, but they just made it worse in every single aspect of the challenge. Like, even if it was math equations at every single station, show their progress actively compared to the mole's progress, and it would have been some suspense for the viewer to watch it, as opposed to us being left completely in the dark as to how well the contestants were doing at that point in time, which wherever the timer was at. Because if it's, oh, they are one math equation ahead of the mole, they're going to do really well, and then you see the mole catch up, and then it's, oh, I don't know who's going to solve it faster, the contestant or the mole. Here, there's just a complete disconnect between what happened on site as well as prior to the start of the season, and then we as the audience in terms of what we're watching.
Yeah, and like they could have, even with this challenge, they could have made it more interesting for the mole bit. Like they could have shown all five of the discs on the screen and then just sort of have a gloved hand come over every so often and just take the discs off as the mole solved them. And then sort of made it a clue, oh, the mole was using the right hand to pick this because they were riding with their left hand or something. And then, you know, the mole was left-handed. That could have, you know, genuinely been a decent reveal.
Yeah, the audience could participate in that, seeing the mole take the disc off the table pre-season as they're doing this challenge. Yeah, that's a good point too.
Yeah, the underrated thing about this as well is the fact that because they've picked maths for these puzzles, everything's done in their heads. There's nothing that they can actually show until they've solved it, and then they just write it down. So whilst there is no playing along, there's also no benefit for us watching it because we can't play along at the same time they do because we can't see the discs. The answer just comes up on the screen as soon as they've figured it out. And also, you're just watching people go, right, 1 + 2 + 3 × 4 and all that. It doesn't work as a television product either.
Yeah.
And I don't want to bitch about this season too much because it's been at least a lot better than last year was. It's been a lot more enjoyable for us to talk about than last year. But a lot of this shit is still really stupid that they're doing.
Yeah. This challenge sort of showcases a lot of the problems the last few seasons have had, not just this year and last year, but I think Czechia and Albania kind of had the problem as well, where they're coming up with sort of big concepts as the, you know, the tent pole of the challenge, but then failing to make the challenge, the little bits and pieces of the challenge interesting enough to match those concepts. Like we've had, you know, a haunted house where it was nothing really. We had the road trip. We had the Olympic cauldron that just turned out to be, you know, run around in circles for a bit. We had the orchestra that was sort of the same sort of, you know, the music, like the music challenges are the sort of things we get, you know, every season. They're kind of not interesting at this point. And then we've got this one, which was a really decent, you know, zipline challenge plus beat the mole at something. And then we get math. It's just, they're kind of sort of half-assed in a lot of the challenges and just expecting the big visual or the big sight gag or whatever to carry them across. And it's not working.
Yeah, because they could have literally done this math challenge anywhere. They could have done it on a beach. They didn't need to be on a zipline. They wasted the zipline tour with doing this challenge there, I think.
And the other part with memorizing the troll posters, we as an audience were not really privy to what they were doing. We couldn't see any of the writing on the posters at all. It's just, we just get a few seconds here and there of them muttering the parts of the troll to themselves before they went on.
Yeah. And the way they explained it, I thought it was like, Fon's basically having to memorize everything and then answer the questions and how many he answered correctly, you know, depending on how many of the chests he got to open. But then it turned out it's just one question for each person who's still there at the end. It's like they didn't even develop the concept enough for it to make sense. It was just, you know, here's something Mexican. Let's just do it just to justify doing this challenge in Mexico instead of doing it, you know, on the pier and saving in them.
So Case said he almost had a mishap when skydiving. And they decide to let Fonz do the memorization because they actually trust him again for whatever reason and have the other three do the puzzles. Case hesitates like he's me doing a Tarzan swing, but eventually does the first zip line and his fear disappears. And the first challenge against the mole appears, and it is mental arithmetic. Case has to make 5 wheels, add, subtract, multiply or divide to 24 within 2 minutes and 22, the time of the mole. And it's fair to say he does not do it. He only solves 2 of them and has to stay behind. Also, something else that I think I've pointed out in previous seasons. They have GoPros because obviously you can't really put cameramen up in the towers too much and keep them out of the way at least. But they've got some sort of weird fisheye lens on them. It's not a good televisual product to have this fisheye lens on. And I don't think that is a thing that GoPros have because people wouldn't buy them if it was. They've put a weird filter on it.
It's like the Gladiators revival we just had.
Did that get cancelled yet?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, Ten is still thrilled with how it went, apparently, because they can't read the room, a book, a word. But yeah, like in the 90s, whenever they used to basically strap a proper video camera to one of the Gladiators' heads and just sort of build it into the helmet. And then I was watching this revival, and every so often when they were doing that game where they climb up the wall, you have like a camera that was on the player's head, and it just looked so terrible. Like, it genuinely, like, I could have given my 2-year-old niece, you know, a video camera, just sort of take a photo of, you know, the wall or something, and she would have done better than the camera work that they were throwing out on Channel 10 in prime time.
And yet the UK version, which launched at the same time, doesn't do that. They just have people standing at the bottom and have actual zoom on a camera.
Yeah, because competence.
It's also really good. I'm not 100% up to date on it yet, but I'm still really loving it. On the subject of shows that are definitely going to get cancelled on 10 after one season as well, Top Gear is filming at some point soon.
I'm kind of enjoying the fact that, you know, noted TV racist Bo Ryan is going to have 3 different shows on 10 this year, and they're all going to fail.
I think Hunted Australia is filming at the moment as well.
Or is he going to eventually host that too?
Oh, almost certainly. He's going to do a Pete Yan and host the reunion for them.
And there'll be 5 scenes of him eating ice cream during the reunion?
Yep, it'll just be him, Boss and Hoss in a hotel room. He'll be eating ice cream, they'll be serenading him pinatas. So Anna's the last one to zip line, and Rosario tries to agree with Fonz to not let her do the second puzzle as he suspects her, and the puzzles get harder. And they decide in the end to let Anna do the second one, and she has 6 minutes and 12 to beat the mole for her puzzles.
This, I don't know what to make of this scene. It makes Rosario look a lot more suspicious right before the end of the game.
I think he was trying to be suspicious to throw Fonz off the scent.
Just the logic of it was really odd. Oh, we need to make Anna do this because if she does the puzzle here, she can't sabotage it. What?
The thing they've not mentioned in a little while as well is Rosario and Fonz do have a bond here.
Yeah.
I made a note of that as well, is that this alliance has apparently been in play. It's been mentioned randomly since, what, episode 2, episode 3, or when Babs came back? Was it when Babs came back that the alliance was first mentioned? And that was the laundry scene? Yeah, that this has been some key alliance, yet we've never... This is the only conversation we've seen between Fonz and Rosario. What up with that? When it's supposed to be this key alliance that both of them are going to be in the final 3, they're going to be in the final reveal, and yet this is the only conversation we've seen between the two of them all season long.
It's just super lazy.
Yeah, it's very odd because all other seasons, if there is a key alliance like this that's lasted the whole game and is critical as to who wins, who loses, and potentially who is even declared as the mole at the end of the game, that alliance is usually gets several scenes in any version of the mole. We're going even back to like the early American seasons where even temporary alliances get shown a lot. But if it's an alliance that lasts all season, we usually get a lot of scenes dedicated to it because it determines the whole season revolves around it. And yet here we are. And this is the only conversation we're ever going to get between Fonz and Rosario about their alliance. And it's just a 1-minute conversation in a segment within a challenge, and that's it. Very odd.
It's not like either of them are bad characters either, because Rosario did have a very slow start in terms of entertainment, but Fonz has been really entertaining from basically minute one of this season. He had a dip in the middle and then came back strong. But like, it's not like Fonz has been boring and Rosario has been boring, or Fonz or Rosario have really been boring this season. They've been big characters. It doesn't make any sense not to show A, them interacting, and B, anything to do with the formation of their alliance.
Yeah, like we've seen more scenes about Rosario and Babs being aligned, and Babs was only in two episodes this season, or three episodes this season, and went home weeks ago.
So Anna rattles through her puzzles, much to Rosario and Fonzie's shock, I'm sure, and Rosario then takes the final puzzle and has 19 minutes and 37 to beat them all. Luckily for us, watching people do maths in their heads is super interesting TV, and he fails after completing three puzzles, and as Anna points out, he even got bitten for his trouble.
And one thing to note too is that they showed more of Anna going through the puzzles compared to, or going through the equations, more than they showed Rosario, even though Rosario's math equations had 13 additional minutes on the time limit. So I'm guessing Rosario must have just tried to do it all in his head and not really talk about it out loud. And that's why we only saw like 30 seconds of the footage where just fast forwards to, oh yeah, by the way, Rosario failed it.
Yeah. I think it helps that Anna was basically the only one of the three who actually made any sort of reasonable sense of progress.
Yeah, it is worth pointing out as well that there are some people who argue that maths is a science, and Anna is a science journalist. So realistically, she should have been good at this anyway.
And Rosario's math equations involve double digits, which makes it substantially tougher and has a lot more trial and error involved.
So Anna and Fonz get to the end. Fonz gets his question correct to earn €250 in his pouch, and Anna gets hers to earn €750 for a total of 1,000 of 4,000 for the pot.
That is cruel that the other pouches contained way more money than the two that they opened. There were just two other pouches, right?
Yeah, I think it worked out that the four pouches were going to be $250, $750, $1,250, $1,750, but I don't know.
So it just so happened that they picked the two pouches of least value, I guess?
Yeah.
That's terrible.
I mean, from a mole point of view, when everyone just agrees, oh, let's just go to the table in front of us, you're absolutely laughing if you're Anna as the mole here.
Yeah.
Because you go, well, I'm going to then win because I got €750. It'll potentially throw people off the scent slightly.
Mm.
And let's be honest, I'm going to make sure that the person with the lowest amount of money is the person who never gets challenged. So this is the absolute bare minimum they were really going to earn in this challenge, I think.
Who did suggest that they all just go for the pouches in front of them?
It was a group decision, I think. I don't think there was one person pushing it, really. I think it was just a, should we all just go for the ones in front of us? Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. I don't think anyone really cared.
No.
Much like us.
I think the plan was basically all four of them get through from a contestant point of view. They didn't really care where it was.
Yeah.
It is funny that, that all they wanted to do was to get through the season with over €9,000 and then the pouches they earn. They were just one pouch away from crossing it.
So Rick is at Fuerte San Felipe for their final challenge, earning treasure worth 1935 locked in a chest. They have a treasure map and must look for clues and keys underwater, with voices leading them to the correct place. They're allowed to try four keys, but if they decide to gamble on just one key, then the money will be doubled to €3,870. And I'm sure you expect me to now rant about the weird numbers, but I'm not going to because it's actually fulfillable. This is all right, because they can actually fulfill it in the mole money they have.
It's an even number.
Yeah. Do you know why it's 1935?
I don't. I was going to ask whether you guys knew that.
I do. It's basically just one of each note. The seven positive notes are 1,500, 250, 100, 50, 25, 10. So it's add up to 1935. It's the same amount they gave Yura in that stupid phone call challenge last year.
Yeah, I remembered we discussed 1935 as a number and I couldn't remember why.
I thought it referred to the average year that the contestants from this season were born, but I guess I was wrong.
The candidates are in the Pirate Canal at the Bacalar Lagoon, where there are four wooden platforms with 20 keys atop them, and there are also four speakers underneath the water. Two of them have to stay near the platforms, while the other two listen to the music boxes to hear names that must be excluded, because they are written on the tags on the keys. Now this is a super interesting thing to watch, is people sorting through keys.
Some unintentional comedy, though, with Case and Fawn swimming, diving into water that was like half a meter deep.
There was, and this is the suspect list question this week, not that it matters anymore, which is which team was the mole on? Were they at the wooden platforms or were they under the water? But I don't think the combination of Fonz and Case diving really makes this challenge worthwhile, especially for a final challenge.
Case was like floundering in water that was 50 centimeters deep.
Yeah. I mean, even last year when we had, you know, a really bad season all the way through, we at least got, you know, the fun jet boat challenge at the end.
Is that the one where they had to change what clothes they were wearing?
Yeah, it was utterly pointless, and I think I hated it almost as much as I hate this one.
Yeah.
But yeah, at least it was a spectacle rather than just...
Yeah.
Right, Santa Ana, Santa Domingo.
And then, you know, Albania, we had three really good challenges in that final episode with the spy thing, supermarket laser tag, and whatever the other one was.
It was the search for the hotel room, or search for the money hidden in the apartment that they lost the money on again.
Yeah, but like that was a really good finale, and then we've had basically two terrible, terrible, terrible finales in a row.
Yeah.
I hope next season is better.
So do I. Whichever one it is, because we don't actually know whether they're holding the civilian one till the end of next year or whether it'll be the end of this year, and we'll find out about it next week.
Yeah.
They may very well put a trailer in the reunion for civilian Mole's return.
I still don't get why if Case was just like trying to dive headfirst into the water when all he had to do was just lean down and just put his face in the water to hear it. That dive was completely unnecessary because the water was so shallow.
I think at that point, Case just really needed to secure himself a banner on our podcast. He does it this week. We have him looking unimpressed towards the camera on the zip line as the banner this week. But it's taken a while for Case to get himself a banner.
And he was even floating on his back as if he had swam several kilometers. And all he's done is just lean a few centimeters into the water to hear a music box.
I think my favorite thing in this whole episode is in that, like, in that conversation between the challengers where I think that we skipped over, where Case is basically going on, oh, you know, they did all the zipline stuff, and then I had to solve a puzzle.
It's his kryptonite. I mean, he nearly died when he skydove, but his kryptonite is puzzles.
He's just been so, like, gloriously unimpressed with everything this season, and I don't blame him.
So they narrow the keys down and then have to return to the boat where the map is. They take the time to narrow the keys down further to 12. And they reach the fort with 6 minutes to go, and Rick tells them about the risk. A Peter Yanker's gamble, if you will. They decide to go for four keys, although Case does want to take the risk. None of the chests open, meaning they earn nothing of €3,870 for the challenge, €1,000 of €7,870 for the episode, and €8,585 of 108,629 for the season as a whole, narrowly avoiding the title of lowest pot ever.
They still have like 20 keys with them when they get to the boat and start working through them. So why wouldn't you do that immediately at the start of the challenge? Like, why wouldn't you just grab all the keys, bring them to the boat, and then just do it as a group?
Well, yeah. See, also, why wouldn't you just dive down and pick up the speakers?
Yeah.
I mean, that one's probably specifically against the rules, but you 100% would take all the keys and bring them a bit closer.
Yeah.
This pot as well is record-breaking for a reason you may not anticipate. It is, in fact, the lowest percentage earned of any season that we have covered on the podcast.
I was about to say, because once I typed in over 100,000... Euros up for grabs this season, they only have 8,585. I was thinking, that is only 8%.
Yeah. It is.
And I was thinking, I cannot recall the season other than the million euro karaoke challenge where they earned such a low percentage. a realistic low percentage.
It breaks the record from season 19 of 8.78% with 7.9%.
I've noticed that with like Vidim, if they're in an area that's right on the water or known just for a tropical beach, they love having the final challenge in the water. But I was thinking was it Hong Kong, Philippines, where they had those where they went at sunset with all of the bottles lit at night and you had to compete against the mole to get to the certain bottles to prevent money from being taken away from the pot. I thought that was a neat concept. And then, or in Czechia, when they didn't have an area in the water to go to, they still went all out with a similar concept in the caves, right? And I just feel like they have, even if the challenge isn't a home run, they always try to go for some unique all-out visual that's at least cool to see on screen or has some sort of element that incorporates the mole into it. But this challenge did not really involve any of that.
No.
Not being funny, but if they have a fort to use, why don't they put the speakers in the bowels of the fort and have the acoustics work there and have them shout across the fort to each other? That would have been way better. You don't need the swimming element. You don't need the diving element. You don't need the hurry to the boat and them probably being told you've got to go within 10 minutes of the time running out, otherwise you're not going to get there, and then ignoring it for another 5 minutes like they did with the piñatas. You don't need any of that. If you've got the fort as a location, use the fort as a location.
Yeah.
And then we get the traditional final dinner. Anna finds out about all the advantages that she never had, including Case being duped by Fonz on the bike ride for Yokas.
That was the highlight of the episode, where all I wrote down is, Case finally figures out how the mole works.
And you can tell they're struggling for content, because there's like a big, huge section of this that's like a discussion of who still has jokers they can't use. Like, we spend like an entire minute of this episode trying to work out who's got jokers, who's taking them home. And I'm like, just show us something else. Like, do a quick challenge, even if it's only 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah, something that involves the mole right before the end, where maybe production throws them a bone and gives them a chance to earn the 500 euros so they can finish the season with 9,000 euros. It's under 9,000.
Can't be right. So it's day 18. That's the final day in Bacalaria. Rick meets each of them one final time. They're told that their search is almost over, while they were already so close on day one as they shook hands with the mole. Since then, the mole has tried to sabotage without being noticed, or have they been spotted? They all say to him that they know who the mole is. Before they take the final test, they can visit the fortune teller one final time. She will reveal some secrets which may secure their suspicions or send them on new paths. He also warns them that someone will still be going home before the end of the final test. The fortune teller has such an easy job here.
Yeah.
Wonder what she's been doing in the 17 days between the premiere and the finale.
You'd sort of hope that she's part of production as a fixer or something, but if she is literally just a Mexican actress who was hired for the Dia del Topo and then hired to fly out to Bacalar for a 2-minute segment, that is easy money, surely.
She probably earned more than the contestants did this season.
Oh, almost certainly. She does ask them if they want to know the future one last time. The crystal ball shows them people from the Dia del Topo receiving line, and one of them is the mole. It is now time for the final test. 40 questions about the identity and actions of the mole, all season long. Whoever knows the most will leave Mexico with €8,585 and unmask the mole. Whoever knows least will still go home before the finale. Case thinks that Anna is on Fonz, Rosario is on Fonz, and Fonz is on Anna. Anna did repeat some incorrect numbers in the Frida Kahlo assignment. Rosario is very smart. At the wrestling match, it all went very wrong. He took a picture of the entire group of wrestlers and not one of them, which was against the rules. He hopes everyone is on Fonz and that the mole is Rosario or Anna. Anna thinks she has her information in order, but there are a few questions she doesn't know. One of the three men she can cross off as she was never suspicious of him, so she wouldn't be here if it was him. Fonz kept trying to make others suspicious, like when he touched the money stones. She went into the final test confident that she would get 40 out of 40, but she's not that confident anymore. Fonz didn't know the answer to 4 of the final questions that he saw. He now just has to remember the answers for one person. At one point, he found everyone suspicious. Rosario has also seen the final test questions, and he didn't know them all either, but he thinks he's improved on 8 of the answers. His mole has kept a lot of money out of the pot, and he has the feeling that he was onto them quickly. He feels vindicated, he has gone for his mole, and everything is locked in. They meet Rick for one final time, he tells them the game is over, and he's curious as to whether the fortune teller's visit opened their eyes. Rosario's name is the first typed in, he's the first finalist. Anna is the second one typed in. Unsurprisingly, she is the second finalist, leaving just Case and Fonz. Case's name is the third one typed in, and it is red, leaving Fonz as our final finalist.
We can probably rule out Fonz as the mole, just from how like they don't act like it's a foregone conclusion when it's down to him and Case, like they did with Babs and, you know, other people.
Yeah, I mean, the other element of it is as well, we didn't end with one of you is the winner, one of you is the loser, and one of you is the mole. Fonz, you're not the winner. Rosario, you're not the loser. Anna, you are the mole. Or whatever.
Yeah. You're the mole. Wait, damn it, I messed up my line.
Damn it, I've spoiled it. Spoiled it months in advance. But yeah, like they didn't end with that, which suggests that it's not as ambiguous as it could be.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say that Anna is definitely not the winner of this season.
No. It sounded like she was somehow still split in on two people on the final test.
I was thinking, I wonder if Case split it between three people on the final test.
I mean, the reason that I kind of knew that Case was going is because we actually got actual suspicions from him. The other three, we really didn't. We got the usual, oh, it might be this person, oh, it might be that person scenes, but we never got anything concrete off the other three, whereas we did for Case. We knew he didn't suspect Fonz, and we knew that he suspected either Rosario or Anna.
I assume that the reason why we didn't get any clear suspicions from anybody, I mentioned this in the Discord chat, that I think, or I assume, all three of them pick the same person as the mole. When it's just three people, you can get away with that because you can say, well, there have been years where the mole and the loser pick the winner as the mole. But here, it's if three people are on the same person as the mole, and one of the three gets executed, it makes it pretty clear who the mole is.
So Case says he's disappointed to leave right before the end, but he guessed wrong. Every now and then, he didn't catch on to what was going on, which made him a bit suspicious to the group, but he enjoyed himself thoroughly. Rick then returns to officially confirm them as finalists. The search is over, one of them is the mole, one of them is the winner, and both of those answers will be given next week.
Funny thing is that Case will still be riding in the same minivan as the contestants to the airport, probably.
Yeah, I didn't see the traditional now scene of Ponderosa of Case walking in and everyone going, oh no, Case, you're not the mole, we didn't expect that in the slightest. So I'm presuming that he didn't go to Ponderosa. But yeah, he's blatantly just going to run straight to the airport. You're right. Next time, all is revealed in a ridiculously long reunion episode. Hopefully, Anna is the mole, and I can be smug at winning the pool back-to-back years. So, with Case leaving, Michelle's house of cards is crumbling, leaving her with just Rosario. Logan still has Fonz, and I have Anna. It's the scenario that we wanted a few weeks ago. Everyone's still in it, with a final three, one person each. In First Suspicions, in a reversal of fortune from last week, six people, Julian, Jack, Fly101, Alan, Fuzzy, and me, all lost their ninth suspicion, whilst one of last week's leaders, Shah, lost his first suspicion. The new joint leaders with a score of 10, where the minimum is 6, are Labai, Sven Derek, and Bindles.
Yay.
On the other end of the scale, Fuzzy is no longer the worst, as two of our former leaders this season, Sandra and Jason, both have a score of 19. In the adjusted averages, Anna's now on 1.37, Fonz is on 2, and Rosario's on 2.63 out of 3. And I will also say that three people are on for a perfect game currently, with both their first and second suspicions still in, and all three of them have different combinations.
Oh.
Which means there is a 50% chance that we are going to have someone do a perfect game on first suspicions. Obviously, if you pick them all first, you win regardless, but Logan does like to pressure me and go, you need to pick a winner, eh? So someone could get a perfect game here. Someone could get a score of 3 with the mole and the winner in the correct positions.
Has anybody scored the perfect game?
Don't think so. I don't remember anyone scoring the perfect game. I just looked out of interest yesterday when I was looking at the stats. I thought it'd be interesting to see whether anyone was on for a perfect game. And yeah, three people. I think Michelle is one of them. I think Michelle put Rosario first, Anna second. I can't remember what the other two combinations are. But yeah, there's three people who are on for a perfect 1-2 at the moment. On the suspect list, as I've already said, the question this week is, where was the mole on the lagoon? This is also the last week to use your Joker, use it or lose it. And the results will be revealed live on the podcast next week, which means that you'll see them like 2 days before you hear our reactions to them. But we will actually reveal them to ourselves live on the podcast, probably on Monday next week.
Will you fly to Vondel Park to announce the results of the pool live?
I will not. Unsurprisingly, Avro have not been in contact to invite me to the VIP area of Vondel Park, so I'm not going to the finale.
Oh, that's a shame.
If they want to hit me up, I am very much free this weekend. I'm off work after Friday. The Dutch suspicions for the final week are Anna with 48%, Rosario with 28%, and Fons with 24%. Anna is up 15%, Fons is up 7%, and Rosario is up 9%. Final two questions. Who is the mole and who's going to win?
I think I was very tempted to swap in Rosario just because this is the third round in a row that he has cost the group a lot of money. But I just don't want to be that idiot that switches at the finale and then be wrong after being on the correct person all season. So I'll stick with Anna as the mole and Rosario as the winner. And Fonz as a wonderful loser.
I still think it's Anna as the mole. Nothing's really changed my mind on that. I'm going to go with Rosario as the winner as well, but I really, really want it to be Fonz.
Yeah, I'm obviously going Anna as mole, and I think I'm torn between my head and my heart here because I really want it to be Fonz as the winner, because not only is he far more entertaining than Rosario, but it also means that after having three people in the final five, Michelle would still lose the pool. And that would be a hilarious meltdown for me to get on DM. She will not be best pleased if that happens. And it also would hilariously mean that the pool was completely pointless this year, because nothing will have changed in terms of our positions from last year, because Michelle got last draft. I do think Rosario is going to win, annoyingly. We've sort of been led towards Rosario winning, but my heart will go Fonz.
So this is exciting. We've all had the same mole suspect since day one, and we all have the exact same finale predictions.
Yeah,
I have joked about this for weeks. Like, next week's results, if it is Anna, are going to be super boring audio, because it's going to be, oh yeah, Logan suspected Anna 9 times. Bindle suspected Anna 9 times. I suspected Anna 9 times. That's a clean sweep. On the pool, Anna was first draft, and she's the mole. Anna would also, can I point out, be the first ever first draft to be the mole, correctly picked. Oh yeah, on the suspect list, obviously we know who won because they got full marks and all that sort of stuff. So it's going to be hilariously by rote, basically, next week if Anna is the mole, I think. Which, you know, is actually quite charming.
I kind of laughed that I've been so bad at this game for near enough 25 years. And then all of a sudden, you know, 4 or 5 seasons in a row, I've picked the mole week one.
Back-to-back wins, potentially.
Yeah.
Anything else you guys want to say?
No, I'm good.
There was something, but I've probably forgotten it, which means it probably wasn't that interesting to say to begin with.
Well, I didn't want to
We're
say
used it. But...
to it. I love how Bindles and I made variations on the same joke there. Right. In that case... thank you for listening to our VSTM All 2024 recap. We'll be back next week to conclude the hunt for another new mole in Mexico. Don't forget, you can contact us on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, or Instagram, where we are RTV Warriors, or you can email us and contact at rtvwarriors.com. Logan is on the artist formerly known as Twitter at LogSpiraki. Binus is a Grim Recapper, and I'm MJ Helmstone. You can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/rtvwarriors. Thank you, as always, to Marika for the subtitles. We'll see you next week for the reunion and also Bindle's birthday. See you later.
Peace out and just chill till the final of flavoring.
Bindles out.
Trust. Now, you should know.
Yes, I do.